This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Dave Alvin is best known as a blues-influenced singer-songwriter and guitarist. He has several albums under his own name. He co-founded the roots rock band The Blasters with his brother Phil Alvin, and he recorded with and wrote songs for the group X. Dave Alvin is also a poet, a good one. We invited him to read from and talk about his new collection of poems, Any Rough Times Are Now Behind You. The last time he joined us, back in the summer of 1994, he performed some of his songs. Let's start things off with an excerpt from that performance to give you a sense of his music. Here he is playing his song, Border Radio.
So one more midnight, and her man is still gone. The night moves too slow, and she tries to remember the heat of his touch while listening to the border radio. And this song comes from 1962, dedicated to a man who's gone. 50,000 watts out of Mexico, this is the border radio. This is the border radio.
Dave Alvin recruited in the Fresh Air studio in 1994. Okay, let's hear him read from his new book of poems, Any Rough Times Are Now Behind You. This poem is called After We Had Sex.
After we had sex, after she left Virginia for Los Angeles, after she moved in with me, after we lived together for 2 years, after she asked every day if I still loved her, after I told her I did, after her first serious anxiety attack, after she wouldn't get a job, after I quit 2 bands, after I went into debt to keep my own band on the road, after a 300-pound guy wearing a purple negligee jumped in my car while I was waiting for her to come out of a store, kidnapped me at gunpoint, saying, "Just drive and I won't kill you," after I said, "Please don't kill me," after he threw the gun down when we saw a cop, after he and I fought for control of the wheel, after the cop arrested him, after I testified against the 300-pound man and he was sentenced to prison for 2 years, after I went broke and sold off my rare guitars, after I broke up my band, after she had more serious anxiety attacks, after she started seeing a therapist, after we started fighting every day, after we lived in 3 apartments, after we spent 4 days not saying a word to each other, after we stopped having sex, after I cheated on her once, after we started seeing a couples counselor, after an old lover died of AIDS, after we took the AIDS test, after we tested negative, after I spent 2 months living in Nashville, after I was dropped from my record label, after I caught meningitis, after I spent 2.5 weeks in 2 different hospitals, after I didn't get paid for a tour I only did for the money, after her car was stolen, after she worked a succession of receptionist jobs, after she asked every day if I still loved her, after I lied to her every day, after she found a decent job downtown, after guys at her job started asking her out, after we decided there was no reason to stay together, after we looked for 3 months at apartments for her, after she finally found one she liked, after I paid her first and last month's rent plus the security deposit, after I moved her things into her new apartment, after I waited for the gas person, the phone person, the cable TV person, after I told her to call me if she ever needed anything, after she asked me if I still loved her, after I lied one last time, after I left her alone in her new apartment, after I ate dinner alone that night at a Chinese restaurant, after I opened my fortune cookie, my fortune read, Any Rough Times Are Now Behind You.
That's Dave Alvin reading from his new collection of poems, Any Rough Times Are Now Behind You. Well, a real lucky in love poem, huh? Dave Alvin, our listeners who know your work know your music. When did you start writing poems?
I actually started writing poems in college, seriously. You know, I wrote when I was a kid, but I had some great teachers at the Long Beach State University Creative Writing Department, Gerald Lachlan, Elliot Freed, and Richard Lee. And it was before I ever wrote songs or anything. And because of their, especially Elliot Freed was very strict about training us to write sonnets and Alexandrines and blank verse, that when I started the Blasters with my brother and started writing songs, it was very easy to write songs. Poetry's a little more difficult though for me.
What do you think you're doing in poems that is different from what you're doing in lyrics?
Well, I can get a little more personal. It would be hard to write something like that and make it. I don't know, maybe you could make it a hit song these days. I don't know. But I think I can maybe be a little more, I don't know what the word, I want to say real, but that's such a useless word. I can be even more honest, you know, in a poem.
The poem that you just read, I have to ask you if a couple of things really happened. Were you really kidnapped by a 300-pound man in a purple negligee?
Yeah.
What happened?
I was sitting in a car. It was a really hot day in Los Angeles, and the woman, my girlfriend at the time, was inside a store, and there was no parking in front of the store, so I went around the corner, and like I said, it was about 90 degrees. I had the windows down, and next thing you know, I had a passenger.
And he got the wheel from you?
He told me to drive, and so I drove, and we were driving down the street, and we were passing the store where my girlfriend at the time was standing, and she's like looking at me like, oh, who's your friend? And right at the same time, there was a policeman giving somebody a jaywalking ticket, and so my passenger and I had a little conversation about the policeman, and then, you know, it was one of those situations where I decided I'm going to try to steer the car into the policeman's motorcycle. That'll get his attention. And so we fought over the wheel at that point. And the rest is criminal history.
How did you get the officer's attention?
We drove the car into the motorcycle.
And he didn't sue you for that, I hope.
No.
And getting back to the poem again, how sick were you when you had the meningitis?
I was pretty sick.
How'd you get it?
Well, they came into the room one day in the hospital, and they said, we need to know every place you've been and everyone you've had contact with in any way for the past 2 weeks. And so they gave me a phone, and it became kind of like a Raymond Chandler thing because I was touring at the time. So it was like calling various cities and, you know, informing the musicians that I was touring with and, you know, blah, 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 people I had met, people I talked to backstage. And we finally tracked it down. There had been an outbreak of meningitis in Santa Cruz where I'd played, and there was one of those backstage scenes after the gig, and there was a woman back there, and it was like 2:30 in the morning, and this is really, this just doesn't make me sound good at all, but we were out of beer, okay? And it was 2:30 in the morning, and this woman that was visiting backstage, one of the other guys in the band, had like a half-full beer. And she wasn't drinking it. And I said, are you done with that beer? And she said, yeah, you can have it. So I finished her beer, and the rest is medical history.
Wow.
And then what was really funny was I called her up, you know, once we traced it, and I said, do you have these symptoms, you know, blah, 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 blah. And she goes, yeah, I feel horrible. I feel horrible. And I was like, yeah, well, look, I'm in the Oakland, you know, Kaiser Hospital in Oakland, California, and you know, I've got meningitis, and you should probably go, you know, check into a hospital immediately. She goes, no, I don't. I don't have meningitis. No, I don't. You know, you have all the symptoms. No, I'm not sick. I'm not sick. I never heard of you. Goodbye. You know. So hopefully she made it through. I don't know.
Well, that's the last time you'll share a beer. Huh?
That was the last time I shared a beer.
Yeah. So was there a...
It's like stupid ways to catch great diseases, you know.
What set off this poem? Was there a specific last straw that made you sit down and write it?
It is actually, all that stuff took place a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, for me anyway, I like to let things gestate. When I write about something when it's happening, it tends to be overly emotional or bad. And it's one of the reasons I don't make a lot of records, because I like to let what's going on in my life gestate. Is that the word?
Yeah.
And so it kind of sat around me for about 4 years. And then one evening, I found the old fortune cookie that said, any rough times are now behind you. And I was trying to remember, where did I get this? Why did I have this? I was like, oh, yeah. You know, and when I'd gotten the fortune cookie, when I got the fortune, I said, I'm going to keep this for the rest of my life now.
And of course, was the prediction true? It's just been a happy ending ever since.
Oh, yeah. I've never been happier.
Now, did you read much poetry when you were young?
Yeah, not a lot. I did some. Where I went to school in Long Beach, there was a little poetry scene that Lachlan and Freed were kind of the patron saints of, or maybe Bukowski was the patron saint, but there was a lot of there was such a good writing department that a lot of writers went through there. I don't know if you're familiar with Bob Flanagan, the late Bob Flanagan, who passed away about a month ago. He and I were in school together. And so, yeah, there'd be readings at, you know, little bookshops and all that. And in those days, this was, you know, getting to be way back there, you know, it was kind of fun. You know, you'd drink a beer and read a poem, and then your teacher would drink a beer with you and read his poems, and it was fun, you know.
Were the worlds of music and poetry usually two separate worlds for you?
Yeah. A lot of musicians don't understand poetry, and a lot of poets don't understand musicians. You know, to me, they're pretty much the same thing. A lot of my songwriting influences have been more literary than songwriterly, you know. When I write lyrics for a song, I'm thinking as much about Raymond Chandler or Ernest Hemingway as I am thinking about Chuck Berry or Bob Dylan.
You know, it seems to me if you're reading even if you're reading poetry at a bar, let alone at a bookstore, that there's much less that separates you from the audience than at a club.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, you have all the equipments, you know, the instruments and everything separating you from the audience. And second of all, it's just a different atmosphere. You're much more accessible at a poetry reading.
Yeah, I actually don't like doing poetry readings. So
for that reason? Or?
Yeah, that and I liked them when I was young, when I was in college. They were fun because they were kind of a way of, you know, like screaming, you know, and getting a lot of those, you know, confused emotions you have at that age. It was a way of getting them out, and it was a way of, especially with the teachers I had, it was a way of feeling like that I came from someplace, that I was somebody. And I think that that's one of the great things that poetry can do for just, you know, everyone once they start writing it, is it helps you to define yourself. And but now it's gotten to a point where if I don't have a guitar on, it's not that I feel naked, it's just that I don't think I'm very good at it. You know, there are some people that, you know, Henry Rollins, for instance, is great at performing his work. And that's, you know, not something that I wouldn't put myself down the Dylan Thomas category of inspired readers, you know.
Singer, songwriter, and guitarist Dave Alvin is my guest. He has a new collection of poems called Any Rough Times Are Now Behind You. We'll take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with singer, songwriter, guitarist, and poet, Dave Alvin. Did you, when you were in school, go through the lyrics as poetry scare? Were your teachers were hand out Xeroxes of Bob Dylan or Simon Garfunkel?
Yeah, they do that. Except because I went to a Catholic school, they would always be, they wanted to interpret all the lyrics to rock and roll songs in a religious context.
Oh, that's great.
So the teachers would bring in, the brothers would bring in Aqualung or a record like that and, you know, talk about, you know, Aqualung in relationship to Catholicism, and it would just be, you know, and then the kids are all looking at each other because they're out, you know, smoking pot or something in the parking lot listening to it, and they're not thinking of anything like that. You know?
This is another poem I want you to read for us.
Yeah.
This is a poem about Charles Bukowski.
Yeah.
But before you read it, tell us why you wrote it.
When he passed away, Linda Bukowski, his wife, asked me and about eight other writers to write sort of remembrances or tributes to him for a magazine, a poetry magazine out in L.A. called Caffeine. And so I was real honored that Linda thought of me for that. And that's another true story, and it does involve the same person from the other poem.
I'm glad you said that. I thought this was two really bad back-to-back relationships.
Oh, no, no. No, I think I can mine this one for another 10 years. Every time I get up, I think of something else that was horrible about it. But and I should be fair and say that she's probably writing poems that are as accurate about me being a no good as mine are. Want to do it now?
Yeah, why don't you read it?
It's a poem for Charles Bukowski. I once lived with a woman who owned doubles of every F. Scott Fitzgerald book. If you really loved me, she'd say, you'd burn your Bukowski books. Already in the name of love, I'd quit smoking in the bedroom, stopped talking to most of my close friends, and thrown away a small collection of porno magazines and even an autographed copy of Bob Flanagan's S&M Love Sonnets. But the Bukowski books was where I drew the line. No, I'd tell her. And sometimes that ended the discussion, and sometimes it didn't. When it didn't, she'd harangue me with all the criticisms usually thrown at Bukowski, like a non-smoker preaching the evils of secondhand smoke. And I, like a smoker praising the joys of tobacco, tried to explain what it was like when I saw him read at my first poetry reading in a small bar in Long Beach in the mid-1970s. I tried to explain what it was like seeing an old white guy as tough and cool as the old black bluesman I'd grown up seeing. How the bar was so crowded that all I could see above the drunks and hecklers, the English professors and the students, and all the young men pretending they'd seen and done all that old men had, was his head. His face scarred and unshaven, hair greasy and combed back, the kind of face you used to see on the old men in the old bars on the old streets like Western, Atlantic, and Vermont. I tried to explain what it was like seeing a man who, at a time when rock and roll meant nothing and everyone said, have a nice day, understood the silent madness of an empty room. A man who understood men, men like my father, men who passed out drunk at kitchen tables or on bathroom floors, who spit out chunks of their lungs while fumbling for another cigarette, men who felt so much they prayed to feel nothing. But I tried hardest to explain to her how I left the bar that night with words pounding in my skull for the first time like a good rock and roll song. His words, words like nothing I'd been taught in school, but had felt every day of my life. And I tried to tell her how from then on I wanted to write poems, songs, anything, and how like the old blues man gave me music, Bukowski gave me words. I never burned my Bukowski books, and I haven't seen the woman I lived with in years. I guess I really didn't love her.
I like that poem.
Thanks.
And I'm wondering if you think singing has helped you read your poems.
No, it's probably hurt. I probably read better before I sang.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah, because before I used to actually enjoy poetry reading a lot before I started singing because it was my only outlet that I could, you know, it was the only way I could get my words out through my voice. Because in the Blasters or the time I was in X, you know, my brother Phil was doing all the vocals, or John and Xene, and so I loved to do poetry readings back then because it was more like, okay, it's my turn now, you know. And now my rhythm is more of a singer's rhythm than a poet's rhythm, and as far as reading, if I was to spend maybe a year practicing, I might get pretty good at it. I don't know, but yeah. Maybe with the next book.
You know, I sometimes think that even if I fancied myself a writer, and even if I could write really well, that I might not have the taste to write anything truly autobiographical, because I'd be so self-conscious about not only revealing my own secrets, but the secrets of the people who I've known well and would be writing about. And I wonder if that's been hard for you, like the work you read for us today. The woman you referred to is a real person. I mean, is it hard for you to write about her in that way?
Well, in some ways, yeah, it is, but it's almost... because they're short poems, it's you almost cartoon it, if you know what I mean. She's actually a really great person from a great family. It's just that we shouldn't have been together, and what I just said doesn't make for a good poem. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
So, knowing that, and usually when I write poems, is very late at night, and when my sensors are down, and. So I try not to think about it. Usually, my experience has been that when I've written a song about someone and they can figure it out, or even when I've written poems about them, even if it's, you know, not derogatory but honest, they tend to laugh or get, you know, feel complimented, you know. And I don't think, you know, I mean, if if you read the whole book, I don't think I come off sounding like, you know, a Catholic priest in this book either. So it's not like I'm getting off scot-free. A Catholic priest handing out lyrics to Aqualung.
Well, I'd really like to go out with one of your recent records. Do you want to choose a track that you maybe something you've been performing in concert on your tour?
From one of the recent records?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably the closest that I've come to kind of getting the poetry voice, my poetry voice into a song would probably be a song called $30 Room from an album called Museum of Heart, if you got that.
Well, great. Thank you very
much
for talking with us.
All right.
Good luck with your poems and, of course, your music.
Thank you, Terry.
Dave Alvin's new book of poems, Any Rough Times Are Now Behind You, is published by Incommunicado Press. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.